So we're talking about underemployment all this week. 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. We want to hear the stories of how you're coping with unemployment by perhaps entering the world of underemployment. Temp workers get fewer benefits. They have less of a cushion. That is to say, do they have any cushion at all? We want to hear your story at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. So considering this economic crisis, what is it they say on Oprah? If it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger. We are evolved to cope with adversity and scarcity. But abundance in the United States certainly the longstanding economic prosperity that's really preceded since the end of World War II has made us fat. It's made us broke, and it's made us very, very anxious in dealing with the current crisis. UCLA neuroscientist Peter Wybrow says the economic downturn could tap into some primal brain chemistry and actually help us to function better. And he joins us now by phone from Santa Monica, California. Peter, thanks for being part of the program.
Absolutely.
You know, this is a pretty interesting premise because, you know, the American dream is predicated on patient, hardworking, indefatigable workers who come up with interesting ideas and stick with them to make them work. It seems as though the prosperity of the last couple of generations has made us unable to be patient and do anything except instant gratification.
Oh, that's correct. Yes, I believe so.
So what are we going to do about that?
Well, I think actually it's being done for us, as you just said. The fact is that the prosperity has disappeared, or at least momentarily it's disappearing, and we have to come back to thinking about how we deal with less. And that actually puts into gear, I think, the best of human intuition and the best of human thinking.
So what is it about our brains that primally hardwired to have trouble with abundance?
Well, we grew up, evolutionary speaking, in scarcity. Now, the brain is really quite ancient, and it's put together in three pieces. We have an old lizard brain in there that keeps everything running, and then the mammals that gave us attachment to others. But the most recent part of the brain, the part that makes us human, the executive brain, as it's called, in the frontal lobes just above the eyes, is the thinking part. If everything's working well, they work together. But unfortunately, when you give prosperity to any animal of our capacity, they tend to lull themselves into complacency. And then the old lizard brain takes over, and we just want more and more. We want it now, and we want as much as we can get. And in that case, the old executive brain tends to be held in thrall by the lizard, and we're off to the races. And I think that's what you've seen. We get fat and content and don't think too much. And after a while, for all we know, we're just sitting there on the couch flipping the television set. So
I love that image, Peter. Fat lizards sitting on the couch, not questioning anything. And one of the other things you write about is that inequality and insecurity are bred from this concern about losing what it is we have. And so in many ways, growth does not produce contentment, but more anxiety.
Exactly. What happens is that in the complexity of it, you know, markets are actually run by self-interest and by curiosity and by social ambition. Particularly, everybody is competing for the, if you think about it from the evolutionary standpoint again, we're all competing for the same trough, because years ago when we grew up in scarcity, if you didn't eat quickly, somebody else might eat what you had in front of you. So in this circumstance, we're highly competitive, but those particular activities are only part of the market. The rest of it is being fair, sharing, et cetera, which in small communities used to work very well. But now we've escalated our markets to situations where actually there is very little social control. The executive brain doesn't control itself. We just give over to the rampant joy of of getting everything for ourselves as soon as we want it.
Well, in a first blush kind of look, I mean, what you argue actually does seem positive in that adversity is going to force us to get a little more discipline into our strategic outlook and the kinds of choices that we make for ourselves and our families. But in a $6 billion world, there's also maybe a sobering Malthusian argument in here in that if you're not going to be patient and if you can't get control of your lizard brain, you're not going to make it. And that could be pretty destabilizing for the world.
That could be. Obviously, it will be good if we can slow down slowly, as it were. But I still think that in countries like our own, where we're extraordinarily well off, we're very affluent in many, many ways, not only in terms of money, but in terms of ideas and technology and talent, I think that we will start to think again about ways in which we can create a society which is sustainable. And I think that's actually going to be a big plus in the long run. America could become an exemplar in terms of managing affluence because the world is rushing towards that, or it was until a few months ago. And we have to learn how to manage with considerable material possessions. We can't just presume that more of what we have is what the future will be, because that will destroy everything that we have around us in terms of natural resources and so on. Even our cultural infrastructure, I think, as you've seen, has begun to be tattered. We were just talking before the break there about people calling in, talking about their own circumstance and whether or not they were making it in these down times. That means our social infrastructure is eroding just as our physical infrastructure is eroding.
Well, in your book, American Mania, When More Is Not Enough, you argue, at least implicitly, that perhaps growth and success in hardwire terms produces a sense of taking ridiculous risks, and that some of the risks that produce this economic downturn are direct neural consequences of a kind of complacency, and that adversity will keep us from falling for those stupid things going forward.
Yes, that's basically the argument. I mean, if you take the recent meltdown of which started with the housing boom, basically there what happened was that everybody was caught in the material dream of everybody wanting a house, and that was pushed, and then some very smart people began to think, how can I manage this to my advantage? And so with all the derivatives and the various financial wizardry that went on, suddenly we had out there a tsunami of financial instruments that nobody quite understood, and the technology that we had created for ourselves suddenly came back to haunt us, and we found we didn't really understand it.
Well, Peter Wybrow, being smart is a function of good timing. That is at least very, very clear from your research. Peter Wybrow is director of the Semmel Institute for Neuroscience and Human Behavior at UCLA. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, sir.